particularly auspicious day, it is a day called Akshaya Tritiya, third day of the lunar month. Akshaya means infallible, incorruptible. On this day, at the beginning of time, Lord Brahma created the universe on his calendar. I presume it was measured in Brahma's time. But projecting that onto our solar calendar, the day that Brahma created the universe is today. So, just as the universe will last for a long time, as far as we are concerned with our small lifespans, it lasts practically forever. Akalpam, Asurya Chandrasa. If someone wants to say that something will last practically forever, they say that it will last for the whole day of Brahma. It will last as long as the sun and the moon shine. Well, this creation of Brahma, what he produced on this day, will last for many kalpas. It will last beyond the time that the sun and the moon stop shining. So it's a very, very great feat. And therefore, anything that's done or created on this day will be perpetual. If you want to create something that will last, this is the day to do it. So I think that among Hindus, that if they want to make a big purchase, this is the day to do it. If you want to buy a car or a house, this is the day to do it. But also, there is a transcendental significance. This is the first day of Sri Radha Krishna's Chandra Yatra. It's supposed to be the hottest day of the year, measuring according to the lunar calendar. This is the peak of the hot season. And so it's appropriate that the devotees want to serve Radha Krishna by giving them chandan on their bodies to cool them. So even though for most of us to be here in Vrindavan, in the peak of the summer, there's a great austerity and it's uncomfortable. But for Krishna's pleasure potency, and for Krishna's surrendered, intimate devotees, there is nothing uncomfortable. Even the heat of the summer is an ingredient in Krishna's pleasure. Krishna enjoys the weather. There is no bad weather for Radha Krishna. They enjoy playing in the snow in the winter. The snow in Vrindavan comes in different colors, not just white. And they enjoy sitting under the summer sun and having their devotees put chandan paste on their body to cool them. This is another part of Krishna's pleasure. Everything that Krishna does, everything that his divine potency Yogamaya arranges in his transcendental abode is only for his pleasure. Krishna never suffers. Krishna is never uncomfortable, and his devotees are never uncomfortable. Eta ishana ishasya prakriti sto pi tadgunai na yujyate taratmasthaya yata buddhistarashvaya. This is what makes God, God. What distinguishes him from ordinary beings. That even though he's present within the material creation, the realm that is subject to strict laws, where if something's too hot or too cold, it's uncomfortable and painful.
even though the Supreme Lord enters that realm, and even voluntarily restricts his pastimes to obey the laws of time and space. Because Krishna's visible pastimes, public pastimes, that occur in history, follow the laws of, obey the laws of time and space. In his visible pastimes, as Srila Jiva Goswami has explained, Krishna does only one thing at a time. He's only in one place at a time, in his visible pastimes. He performs one pastime and then another one. And if your pastime with Krishna is on the waiting list, you have to wait until your turn. That's the nature of Krishna's visible pastimes. Krishna voluntarily accepts the restrictions of time and space so that he can share his pastimes with the conditioned souls. In his invisible pastimes, he does everything at once. He's performing all his pastimes simultaneously, and he's reciprocating with all the devotees, all at the same time. That's different. But everything is for Krishna's pleasure. Even sitting under the summer's hot sun of the summer, it's only for Krishna's pleasure. Yatha punistarashaya, even though he's situated in material creation, he's not affected, he's not himself limited. No matter how hot it gets, he's not uncomfortable. No matter how cold it gets, Krishna is never uncomfortable. And then yatha punistarashaya. Similarly, the intelligence of a devotee who has actually taken shelter of Krishna, similarly, is also not affected by the restrictions of the A surrendered devotee also never feels too hot or too cold. That's the solution. Not to spend 50,000 rupees for an air conditioner and then have a huge electric bill. That's not the solution. The solution is to take full shelter of Krishna, then it will never be too hot or too cold for you.
Hare Krishna. So I'm going to read the verse. I'm right, this is Canto 2, Chapter 8, Verse number 2. Okay. Parikshit Maharaj, in this chapter, is asking a whole series of questions from Shukadev. Their conversation has already been going on since the beginning of the second canto. But now, Parikshit is going to propose the questions that will form the basis, the answer to those questions will form the basis of the rest of the Bhagavatam. So these are important questions. It's the whole program of the Bhagavatam is being defined by these questions. And this is the beginning. The first thing that Parikshit asks. Verse number 2.
Etat veditum icchami, tatvam, tatvavidam poro, harer adbhuta viryasya.
Truth. Tatva vidya
of
those who are well versed in the absolute truth. Vara, O best. Hare, of the Lord. Adbhuta Viryasya, of the one who possesses wonderful potencies. Kata, narrations. Loka, for all planets. Sumangala, auspicious. The king said, I wish to know narrations concerning the Lord, who possesses wonderful potencies, are certainly auspicious for living beings in all planets. Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of narrations of the activities of the Supreme Lord, is auspicious for all living beings residing in every planet. One who takes it as belonging to a particular sect is certainly mistaken. Srimad Bhagavatam is certainly a very dear scripture for all the devotees of the Lord, but it is auspicious even for the non-devotees. Also, because it explains that even the non-devotees hovering under the spell of material energy can be delivered from such clutches if they hear the narration of the Srimad Bhagavatam with devotion and attention from the right source representing the Lord by the cyclic succession. So this devotional activity of simply sitting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is extremely potent. This is what we're doing here, sitting on the ground and simply trying to listen, giving, Bhagavan likes to use the phrase, oral reception. It doesn't require very much energy. It requires some a good amount of energy to speak. It's one of the most strenuous activities, is talking. But hearing doesn't require much expenditure of energy. It does, to hear properly, is not so easy. Prabhupada specifies that in the last sentence of his purport, that the non-devotees even can be delivered from the clutches of material energy and illusion. If they hear, Prabhupada says, the narration of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but then he specifies some conditions. That is, any hearing in any kind of way from just anybody. Rather, Prabhupada specifies, hear the narration of the Srimad Bhagavatam with devotion and attention from the right source representing the Lord by the cyclic succession. Here in Vrindavan, and where I live in Govardhan, every day someone is doing Bhagavad Saptaha, or Krishna Katha, or Ram Katha, or this Katha, or that Katha, and the speaker's billboard picture. The picture is on the billboard advertising him as representative as Vyasadeva himself. 12-year-old Vyasadeva, 80-year-old Vyasadeva, female, male, in between, all sorts of Vyasadevas, all claiming to be providing us the enlightenment of Srimad Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada says, no, you have to hear from the right source, who actually represents the Lord by the cyclic succession. Srimad Bhagavatam, even if it's chanted,
material condition.
Or a demon is still transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam can be recited, the recitation of Bhagavatam can be conducted in different modes of nature. Just like devotional service can be performed in mixed forms. Conditioned by the performer of devotional service may be conditioned by various combinations of the modes of nature. Similarly, the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam can be conducted under the influence of the three modes of nature or combination. This is described in the Bhagavad Mahatmya, the Skanda Purana. So, if a materialist uses the Bhagavatam to do business, to make money, and to as his occupation, because his father trained him up as the family business to recite the Bhagavatam, that is recitation of the Bhagavatam in tamoguna. The mode of ignorance is using the Bhagavatam for one's own material purposes. For money, for reputation, just because you have to do a business to feed your family. And then, if you organize a grand festival, Bhagava Saptaha, or some other, under some other title, spending huge amounts of money, grand organization, you know, a big mandal for hundreds of thousands of people. That is recitation, and you make a big fuss over it. That is recitation of Bhagavatam and the mode of passion. And then when devotees simply concentrate on the hearing, without a big complicated arrangement, they just simply sit down and they hear and they do it every day, not just once in a while. That is recitation of Bhagavatam. In the mode of goodness. And then if devotees listen with real attention and faith, that's transcendental hearing of the Bhagavatam. Any hearing of the Bhagavatam has a good effect, even tamasic recitation and hearing, because the Bhagavatam is that potent. Just like even Nama, the holy name chanted with offenses, has some good effect. So certainly, chanting the Bhagavatam, even offensively, even as a business, which is a great offense, to claim yourself to be representative of Vyas and Shukadeva, and you're just a materialist doing business in the name of the Bhagavatam, that is a great offense. It's abominable. But even that recitation of the Bhagavatam has some good effect. But the effect is limited, and you're not going to get what you can actually obtain from the Bhagavatam. By hearing the Bhagavatam with love and full attention, you can achieve the highest perfection of life. Which actually is not just freedom from the clutches of Maya. That's preliminary. Beyond that is the attainment of Krishna's pure devotional service. Establishing yourself in Krishna's loving service, getting your heart completely purified, and realizing the transcendental ecstasy of loving and serving Krishna and his devotees. That can very effectively and easily be achieved simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Rupa Goswami, in his Bhaktira Samrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, has listed 64 different angas or activities of devotional practice. And he's then singled out 5 of them as the most potent. Shraddha Dhuri. Even if you don't believe, or even if you're not convinced, or don't understand the special value of what you're doing, these 5 processes will work nonetheless, even in ignorance, even without faith, if they're simply performed. Just like some very potent medicine. It will act whether you believe in it or not. If you simply swallow the medicine, then it will work. Some of the other activities in devotional service, you have to believe what you're doing and know what you're doing. But these five activities, very potently and quickly, have such an effect on the heart that ecstasy, love of God, very soon awakens. Jai Shri Murgitai, Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Lalita Vishakha Devi, Radhesha Vasundarikita. And among those five, one of the five of those most potent angas of devotional practice is hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavata Ardhana Asvaro Rosikaiksava. These are the words of Rupa Goswami. To listen or to relish the messages, artha, the purport, the meaning of the Bhagavata. In the company of devotees who are rasikas, who actually have a taste. Because the Bhagavatam is not an ordinary history book. It's not a book of polemic philosophy. It's transcendental poetry which evokes the experience of rasa, of the actual loving exchanges of the finite soul with the supreme. Rasa is the real juice of life, the real thing to be derived. The real thing to strive for is the taste of this rasa. And the Bhagavatam conveys this rasa in every single word. Therefore, although some of it may seem like simple but not really poetic, actually the Bhagavatam is the most elevated poetry, every single shloka of it. Because it's all imbued and expresses this transcendental rasa in the varieties of different kinds of loving exchange between Krishna and his devotees. Even the parts that describe the creation of the material world, even the parts that simply list the genealogy of kings in the Sun dynasty and the Moon dynasty. But these dynasties are Harivamsha, the families in which Lord Hari, Krishna, Ram, in which they appeared. So they are Utipada. To simply hear the names of the ancestors of Krishna will help the devotees awaken their love for Krishna. So, Pariksit is asking these questions for that purpose. He doesn't need ordinary information. Pariksit doesn't need to hear about how the universe was created. What does he need that information for? He's not studying to pass an exam. He's on the verge of death. He's not preparing for a career. He's finished with that. His life is finished. He's getting ready to go back to Godhead. What does he need material knowledge for? How the universe was created. What are the different divisions of human society? He doesn't have any use for this information at this point. But he wants to hear everything that's connected with Krishna. And he wants to hear about the universe of creation, because that's also a pastime of Krishna. And he wants to share this rasa, this ecstasy of devotional service to Krishna with us, the conditioned souls. So therefore, Pariksit is asking the questions that he's going to be asking in these coming verses. About the creation, about Varnashram Dharma, about various topics that seem to be material, but actually because they're all connected with Krishna and involve his leelas, and lead into the discussion of the direct discussion of Krishna's leelas. Therefore, they are appropriate topics of the Bhagavatam. The
very reputable newspaper, New York Times, has its slogan, all the news that's fit to print. The New York Times is supposed to be a serious newspaper. They don't print, you know, fantastic stories just to entertain their readers. They don't print lies. They don't print gossip. They're supposed to be a serious newspaper. So therefore, only all the news that's fit to print. So similarly, the slogan given at the top of the Bhagavatam, just like at the top of the newspaper, all the news that's fit to print. So at the very top of the Bhagavatam, in verse number 2, the slogan is given, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra. In this book, all references to any kind of cheating and religion is kept out. Only the news that's fit to print. Only whatever is relevant to the real business of regaining our pure devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything else has no place in the Bhagavatam. So, understanding that, we should look at all the questions that Parikshit asks and ask ourselves, how is this connected to Krishna's pure devotional service? Because otherwise, Parikshit would not be asking these questions. Etat Vedatam Ichami. I want to know about the following. Etat means I haven't asked yet. What I'm going to ask in the next verses, this is what I want to know about. Etat is two words, tat and etat. Tat means that thing over there, far away, at the back of the room. And etat means what's right in front of me. Or etat means what hasn't yet been said. The following questions that I'm going to ask, this is what, you know, he's introducing. I have a few questions to ask. Is that okay? Do you mind that I ask some questions? This is polite. You walk in on a person, you may be busy with something else. So before you interrupt him and ask all these questions, you should ask, I have a few questions. Do you mind if I ask them? Are you too busy? So like that, Shukadeva has been speaking, Parikshit's the hearer. Now he's going to say something, but before he does, out of consideration and politeness, he says, I have some questions. Do you mind if I speak for a little while and you listen to my questions? Is that okay? Or do you have something else to say? So he's requesting in this verse, Shukadeva, do I have your permission to ask these questions? Harera Bhuta Viryasya Kata Lokasa Mangala. What I really want to hear about are the all auspicious topics describing the activities of Krishna, whose valorous, heroic activities are all very amazing. Bhagavatam is poetry. Poetry should, according to the theory of poetry given by our Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas, especially Srila Kavi Karnapur, it is Alankara Kostava, defines what poetry should be. Real poetry has to express rasa. It can't just be a description of the ordinary activities of ordinary men and women, ordinary heroes. No, it must express the transcendental loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, or Krishna's avatars. Without rasa, poetry is just empty, dry imitation. But also, poetry should evoke a sense of wonder. That's what makes the difference between poetry and ordinary language. I can also say, in my own words, Krishna is dancing with the gopis. But that's just prose, that's just ordinary statements. It's not poetry. There's rasa in it, because the idea of Krishna dancing with the gopis
actually refers to the experience of loving exchanges on the highest platform. But it doesn't do it poetically. It's just mundane words. Not mundane, but plain words. But a poet, the Vaishnava transcendental poet, can express it in such a way that it will actually awaken a reverberation in the hearts of the hearers who are sensitive, who are sympathetic, and they'll experience that blessing within their own hearts by hearing poetry. So, such is the nature of transcendental poetry. Bhagavatam is such poetry. It creates a sense of wonder to hear it because of the wonderful way in which it's expressed. Krishna's pastimes are all amazing, but we weren't there 5,000 years ago. At least we're, you know, in these bodies we weren't there. We don't remember ever being there in this place, Vrindavan, 5,000. Does anybody here remember being in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago? So even if we were, we don't remember it. So we don't have a direct experience of our own. Shukadeva Goswami is giving us the vicarious experience. He didn't see most of it himself either, but he's inspired by his father, Vyasadeva, to describe all the activity, or a good sample of the activities of Krishna. Shukamukad Amrita Drava Samutam. And because these narrations are coming out of the mouth of Shukadeva, they are very splendid poetry. They're being expressed in the most elegant way. And creating, the way that Shukadeva expresses himself, should create a sense of amazement in us, just to hear. Just to hear, even the words, even if we don't know what they mean, well, to speak if Prabhupada is helping us with his translation in purport, and we can understand something of what it means. Adbhuta Viryasya. Krishna's pastimes, especially in the way that they're described by Shukadeva, are amazing to hear. Lokasu Mangala. And they're auspicious for anybody in any planet in the universe. The Bhagavatam is not just for a limited class of people, not just for those who know Sanskrit, not just for the Indians, not just for the Hindus, or for the Krishna Bhaktas. This Bhagavatam is all auspicious for anybody who's willing to hear it with attention and with faith. How do we get this attention and faith? Rupa Goswami is recommending sadhana bhakti. If we prematurely try to jump into the intimate, spontaneous devotion, Radha Rupa Bhakti, before we have strong faith, before we've actually become free from lust, envy, and greed, free enough, if we prematurely try to just sit down in a secluded place and remember the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, we will fail. We will slip back into our old materialism because we're not prepared properly for it. So Rupa Goswami recommends those who are not ready to immediately think of Krishna 24 hours a day, they should practice devotional service under the guidance of representatives of Krishna. Guru Seva is the way to develop devotion and attention. We want to be able to hear the Bhagavatam with attention and with devotion. We should be very eager to work hard in the service of our spiritual master. Whatever is his mission in this world, it varies from one spiritual master to another. They each have individual missions. But my spiritual master has a mission, and if I give my whole life, I'm living in this body, I've got a certain number of years, I've got a certain amount of energy, a certain amount of intelligence. If I use every drop of it to work for the mission of my spiritual master, then, with his blessings, Krishna will give me the this devotion and attention, so that I can sit then and hear the Bhagavatam and get the full benefit from it. This Guru Seva is the key for us. If we neglect that and try on our own to connect ourselves with Krishna, to run off to Radha Kunda and try to perform Radha Ruga Bhakti when we're not ready for it, we will fail. Parikshit knows that. He's approaching Shukadev. Atat Prachami. Therefore, I'm asking you, Muninam Paramam Guru. You are the supreme Muni, the supreme Guru of all the sages. I'm just a king. I'm just a Kshatriya. I'm very fortunate that I can approach you as my spiritual master. Please, tell me what to do. I've got 7 days left. I'll do whatever you tell me. If you tell me to go run off and conquer another kingdom, I'll do it. You're my guru. If you want me to sit and listen to you, I'll do that. You tell me what to do. That is the appropriate attitude of a disciple. The guru tells you to work, you work. The guru tells you to sit down and listen, you sit down and listen. Because he knows what's appropriate for you in every situation and time. The goal is to come to the point that we can simply sit down and think of Krishna constantly. But how to get to that point, we need to take the guidance of our spiritual masters and serve them to get their blessings. With those blessings, Krishna will give us that Shraddha, so that we can, like Parikshit Maharaj, sit down and spend the rest of our life, if it's 7 days or 70 years, spend the rest of our life just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. But we have to prepare for that. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop there. Anybody have any comments or questions, please? Yes, Katya.
I thought we were to hear about Chandan Yatra also.
I said a little bit at the beginning of class.
Mm-hmm.
I said a little bit at the beginning,
but okay.
I don't know any real stories about it. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
I missed it. I missed it.
Okay, but I'm not up on the lore of Chandan Yatra. I don't know. Maybe someone knows some Leela involved. I can't really say. I just know that for the next month, or at least for some part of the month, the temples where Krishna is worshipped, the devotees offer the chandan to them. This is the time of the year where it's appropriate. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to offer a chandan in the middle of the winter. You know, it's cold. The chandan makes your forehead, your head cool. If you're already cold, you don't want to be plastered with chandan. Or the weather is hot, that's the appropriate time. That is pleasing. It's for Krishna's pleasure.
Yes. Yes, at what point does one start Raga Nuga Bhakti?
When you have lobha, when you have, you're greedy for it. But that requires, we have explanations from Prabhupada and others. In order to really have that lobha, you've got to get free of your material lobhas, your material and lust, envy, and greed, to enough that you can actually start feeling a spontaneous attraction, ruchi. You have to have a real sense that you just want to think about Krishna and serve Krishna. If you're still interested in material agenda, then you're not ready for Radha Rupa Bhakti yet. We have to take guidance from our spiritual masters to help decide when we're ready. Of course, we can begin practicing remembering Krishna anytime. But to just put aside all active service in the name of Radha Ruga Bhakti is not appropriate until it's judged by our spiritual masters that we're ready for it. It's not that the two activities, active service and remembering Krishna, are contradictory. We can do both.
But anyway, the difference is that in the Vaidhi stage, we have to follow primarily the authority of Guru and Shastra. We can't trust our own heart, the spontaneous urges of our heart, because we're not pure enough yet. When we can trust the urges of the heart, then that's the real beginning of Raga Nuga Bhakti. When your heart becomes trustworthy, then you're ready.
When you say we, are you including you and me, or what?
Anybody, any devotee. You know, we're all aiming, that's our goal, is to enter into the realm of a full, pure devotional service. Every one of us is supposed to achieve that goal. But when we're ready, that depends on the individual. Each individual. Vaidhi Bhakti, the only purpose of it is to prepare us for Raga Nuga Bhakti. Is that okay? I don't know what
my godbrother Heindra might
have
okay.
An interesting point was made by Vishwanath Swarupa Thakur in Bhagavata Chandrika, which I think is something useful in this discussion. And that is that, what, first of all, Vaidhi Bhakti alone can never lead to Raga. Or better, when Vaidhi Bhakti is administered by the Guru, in other words, when the vidhis are appropriately directed toward elements of Raga,
yes,
then by adhering to the rules, just like we have the rule to chant a minimum of 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we're not chanting 16 rounds of Om Namo Narayana, such things. We're chanting names which are names of Radha and Krishna. Similarly, there's the rule to attend the Bhagavatam class. Bhagavatam, according to Vishnu Chakra and Thakur, in Bhagavata Chandrika, the only purpose of the Bhagavatam is to augment Raga Nuga Bhava. That's the only purpose. So the vidhi to associate with the Bhagavatam is a rule that you should associate with that thing which will augment Raga Nuga Bhava.
Yes.
So in that sense, but just Vaidhi Bhakti alone, based on this Shastra Vishvasmayi Shraddha, which is not, in other words, the activity of devotional service, which is not prompted by greed, but is prompted by fear of transgressing
yes.
the regulative principles, that activity does not in itself lead to Raga. But when the influence of the Rasik Vaishnava, or the Rasa Shastras, which were spoken by Rasik Vaishnavas, like Sukadeva Goswami is a Rasi Vaishnava, so therefore we get the influence of the Rasi Vaishnava, we get the influence of Srila Prabhupada's personal ecstasies in his purport as Prabhupada's Rasi Vaishnava, representing the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, which is a sampradaya of Rasi Vaishnavas. So their influence helps to promote that loka. Once the loka has manifest, and loka means greed, which is caused by the recognition of an attraction toward the objective of Raja Bhakti, because Raja Bhakti is Raja Nuga Bhakti is Raja Bhakti. It is not a question of devotion, you know, to Ramchandra and Ayodhya or to Vaikuntha Narayana. Other realm, but when lobha or attraction for that realm of Raja, for the activities of devotional service that the devotees of Raja have in their relationship with Krishna, their devotional moods, etc., and then when the heart appreciates, you know, and is attracted with a hope and aspiration to one day at long last attain that ultimate goal of life, And then he recognizes, as is described in other places in Shastra, the fruit of the activity of chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the attainment of the realm of Vrindavan. And he recognizes that, for example, the fruit of chanting the Gopal Mantra is the attainment of the darshan of Prajnananda Krishna. The fruit of chanting the Kama Gayatri Mantra is the attainment of the divine service of Radha Krishna in the realm of Vraja. These are the fruits of these activities of personal service. The fruit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is Vraja Prema. You know, so when one understands these things and actually has developed an attraction which prompts a greed within his heart to attain the fruit of all these devotional activities, then at that time, when he performs those activities prompted by greed, Vishwanath in Bharatachandrika says that although they may appear to be the same activities that we would categorize as Vaidhi Bhakti, it is not in fact Vaidhi Bhakti at all, but rather those same activities which are prompted by Gopa, the attainment of Raja Bhakti, those same activities become constituents of Raga Bhakti itself. So just like Sankirtan Yajna is, although the guru may order you to go out and do Sankirtan, or go out and distribute books, or to clean the temple, or to worship the deity, or any such things, he is ordering us to do these things. But when it dawns on the devotee that these very same activities promote the ultimate attainment of the goal of Raja Bhakti, and the greed for the attainment of that goal prompts his adherence to those activities, then it is no longer Vaidhi Bhakti, it is Raghunu Bhakti, even though they appear to be external engagements in devotional service.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, anyway, so...
Did you follow that?
Yeah, pretty much. So the corollary of it, you know, this is one thing to draw out of that, is Srimad, this hearing and chanting of Srimad Bhagavatam is not just an element of devotional practice, Vaidhi Bhakti. It's not only the sadhana, it's also the sadhya. The real audience for the Bhagavatam are the liberated devotees, the supreme Paramahamsas. And we know who Shukadeva Goswami would identify as the supreme Paramahamsas, the devotees of Vrindavan. They're the ones who are most eager to hear the Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was one of his personal pastimes to sit with his associates and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam. He wasn't doing it as a practice to purify himself. He was doing it because he enjoyed the taste of it.
Yes, please.
You were talking about service to the Guru.
Yes.
That is the means by which we can develop, you know, the ability to hear with attention. So you know the verse of Sutra Swaradanas here. You know, actually hearing with taste, you know, Sian Mahat Seva, you know, so this Mahat Seva is the key to hearing the Bhagavatam with relish or with taste.
Hearing and chanting about Krishna in general, hearing the holy name, chanting and hearing properly depends on Mahat Seva, Guru Seva. Thank you.
Yes, please. You said that Guru tells you to sit, you should sit. Like you explained to lecture that the Guru tells you to sit down, you should sit down. So yesterday there was some discussion here.
Yes.
In that, you know, it was one devotee asked, if Guru tells you to get married, so you should, whether you should get married or not, if you are a brahmachari.
Yes.
So what is your opinion about it?
Well, I can probably comment on that in the third canto, in the context of Brahma asking his first sons, the four Kumara brothers, he asked them to get married. And they refused. And he got angry at them. But Prabhupada comments in the purport. This is the one, the order of the guru that a disciple can refuse. Requesting a merit. So that's an exception.
Okay. Prabhupada told Adhya Maharaj, you know, that he wanted to remain a brahmachari, but he told him to get back and got married.
Yes.
So you don't have to refuse. But you know, the loophole is there. You can rightfully tell the Guru, I'm sorry, you promised that in the report here.
There was an instance in Prabhupada's house.
I remember hearing about this incident when some devotees were gathered with Srila Prabhupada, some of the men were gathered with Srila Prabhupada, and there was some discussion about some of them wanting to take sannyas. And Srila Prabhupada told, I forget who it was that he told, but he told, I think you should get married. And the devotee answered that Srila Prabhupada, I'm sorry, but it's not possible for me. Because I'm afraid that if I get married, I won't be able to control myself. So it's better if I stay aloof. So then Prabhupada said, very good. So take sannyas.
So nobody has to get married. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Chandan Yatra Ki Jai, Akshaya Tritiya Ki Jai.